When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The My Baby and Me podcast, in association with Nook.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey, and welcome back to the My Baby and Me podcast. Now, this is a podcast, it's by mums, it's for mums. Some of us admittedly became mothers more recently than others, let's put it that way, but we're all still part of the same club. And let's be honest, most of us have got the stretch marks to prove that we've been there. We'll be discussing a different aspect of pregnancy, parenthood and life with your new baby across 10 episodes in this series. We're here to share advice, experiences and the odd horror story in the hope that you will do better than we did on the road to being a mum. And believe me when I say this, this is really important. We are not here to preach or to insist that you do things in a particular way. The last thing any pregnant woman or sleep-deprived new mum needs is somebody else telling her what she's doing wrong. Now, on today's episode, we're going to be talking about equipment, what you really need, what you might be tempted by, but what actually you don't really need when it comes down to it. We're going to focus on the essentials, and we'll be really clear about what we don't think you need to waste your money on. So here in the studio to help me out, I've got Guardian and Stylist magazine columnist Lucy Mangan. Welcome, Lucy. How are you?
Hi, Jane. I'm fine, thank you.
And how many children have you got and how old?
I've got one and he's three and a third.
Three and a third?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's all quickly worked out.
Yeah, it's all been plain sailing for you.
Oh, God, it's been a breeze.
If only you could see her face. And also here, because this is one of those topics, actually, where it's good to get the input of a dad, the writer and broadcaster Ian McIntosh, who has a daughter who is...
She's three and a third as well.
Is she?
Yeah. Oh. I wonder if there was something on TV that night.
Something rubbish, yeah.
Rather nothing on TV from the sound of things. Right, Ian, you've spent the last 3 years combining your life as a football journalist, you write a lot about football, and a stay-at-home dad. And how has that been, combining too?
I have to say it's been wonderful and very, very challenging at the same time. But I have had opportunities of fatherhood that a lot of my friends have just simply been denied that they have to run out for.
You call it an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Well, not everybody would agree with that.
Well, I can understand that. I guess it depends on perspective. I mean, a lot of my friends will be up at 7 and back at 7 and they'll miss out on everything, whereas on the flip side, and I'm very fortunate, being a freelance writer, I can tend to move things. So I've moved an awful lot of work to night times and the evenings. But during the day, I've been able to go to parks, go to museums, and just, you know, enjoy time with my daughter.
But you already have acknowledged the fact that being a freelance journalist gives you an enormous amount of freedom.
Absolutely.
The vast majority of dads
I'm never very, very lucky. I don't think you ever stop forgetting that while you're enjoying it.
Now, your little girl has just started at nursery.
Yeah.
So how was that for you, for a start?
Well, it was very difficult because obviously it's an emotional time and there's an awful lot of tears. But eventually I was fine. she settled in. Now she's been a little slow to settle. There have been a few protestations at the start, but usually, you know, I'll phone the nursery 10 minutes after I've dropped her off and she's happy as Larry.
Ian, that's what they always tell you.
Is it? Yeah. Is it actually terrible?
Well, we're not there.
I was so calm.
They're actually working looms in the back.
Yeah.
And Lucy, we better give Ian a chance to get over that revelation because I don't think it had occurred to him that they might just be putting it on. And we've no evidence to prove that they are down at the nursery. Lucy, when you first go out with a baby, can you remember your first trip outside the house with your baby?
I can, and it was a very long time. I had a very bad birth and I had to go and live with my mum with my mum for 3 months. And it was at least 8 weeks, I think, before I left the house. And I went five minutes down the road, walking very carefully because I still wasn't right. And being astonished at, you know, I'd lost muscle. It was really hard to walk properly. And this enormous journey stretched out before me with this tiny little scrap of being in the pram. And just thinking, I've got to get all the way there, and then I've got to get all the way back. Mm. and probably I'll have to do this all over again at some point.
Yeah.
As well. And the whole of life just kind of stretched out in front of me. It's kind of, it's this appalling abyss opening up.
I think if, like me, you've got really poor motor skills, the first time you go out in public with a pram containing that precious scrap of humanity, it's a real moment. Now, I can remember the first time noticing automatic doors in shops.
Oh, yes.
Because I hadn't even been aware of them or thought about them before then.
I think all new mothers just thank God for, you know, basically the disability lobbying that's gone on before we got pregnant.
That's true,
for the, you know, the years because you start to depend completely on automatic doors and ramps, and without those you are so stuck. Absolutely. And you know, you long for those bobbly bits leading down to, you know, are going to lead you to a safe place across the road and then up again. And life just becomes a series of, you know, large and small steps, literally and metaphorically, I think.
Well, the times are behind you when you can leave the house just with your keys and 20 quid. You have to take loads of stuff with you. So did you have a specific baby bag that you lugged about with you everywhere you went?
We did. We had it, you know, it's like Batman utility belt, but kind of expanded with all kinds of wipes and creams and roll-up mats. But it's astonishing how quickly that deteriorates, that within just a matter of months, you've gone from rolling out the mat and having everything ready to pretty much your own coat on a park bench.
Which and, will and, do,
yeah,
we should
absolutely,
say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And everyone has done that
beginning.
At some point.
Yeah,
actually, yeah.
You're wiping someone's bottom. It's okay. You don't need first class standards.
Yeah, I know.
You just need to get the job done.
It's hard to imagine now a time before the wet wipe.
Oh, God.
But there was a time.
I never used a wet wipe in my life before I had a child. Now I cannot imagine any scenario in which I wouldn't want to have them.
So, Lucy, you say you would sometimes leave the house just with a nappy, a spare nappy.
Yeah. I'm not a very good mother, Jane, is what it boils down to.
I'm beginning to form a picture of your parenting skills, it has to be said. But you always got through, or did you ever have a moment where actually, in fact, I've done this, I've gone up to a woman in a park and borrowed a nappy. I mean, she obviously didn't want it back. Have you ever done that?
I don't think I've ever actually had to borrow a nappy. When I got back from holiday a couple of weeks ago, for night time, we couldn't find them in our still unpacked luggage, and I had to go next door to the woman who's got a 2-year-old, it's her third child, and beg for a nappy and say, I'm terribly sorry about my entire life, frankly. Could you give me a nappy? Thanks. I'll replace it tomorrow.
Yeah. Anyway,
if we have actually brought them home, in which case, otherwise.
If you don't know your neighbours, you tend to get to know them after you've had a child, and thank goodness for that. Okay, we formed a picture of you then outside the home. What about inside the home? What did you buy before the birth of your child?
I bought a secondhand Moses basket and a new mattress for it.
Which you have to have, the new mattress.
Have to have.
Yeah.
Decent pram. It had a carry cot, so it had everything with it.
Are you still using the same one now?
Yes.
In a different form, obviously, because it's changed, yeah.
I wish I'd had the wherewithal to get a second-hand one, because you really don't need a first-hand pram, I don't think. Unless, you want one that a car seat fits into as well, and then, you know, all hell breaks loose. What else? Not very much else. We've got given a lot of clothes without really asking. People were very kind, because I had one very late, so all my friends had all this stuff that they were very happy to unload on me, and I was very happy to have. So we got loads of clothes, quite a few toys. We got one of those mats that you spread out and they have the sort of mobiles that hang over them,
yeah,
and babies look at them baffled for a few months and then you pack them away again.
And they're not cheap, are they? I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff here, like the baby mobile thing, which you actually don't need. Do you think, Ian, there's anything that is absolutely essential?
I found the most essential thing to buy were those sort of supermarket brand 10 packs of all-in-one suits, you know, with the poppers around the groin. Buy a 10-pack of them, then buy another 10-pack of them, and that should probably get you through the first day. You can mess about, you know, spending all sorts of money on cardigans and hats and ponchos and mini Converse trainers and all sorts of things that will make your baby look like a very expensive doll. But those 10-pack things are, without doubt, the most crucial thing.
People are very sweet, of course, when you've had a baby, if you're lucky, but anyone who buys you a dry clean only garment of any description...
Dead to me. Absolutely well, dead to me.
There is no point.
No.
No. Or the lovely blanket, even. I mean, the lovely, incredibly... Some of them are so ludicrously expensive. And again, covered in sick or diarrhoea or combination of the two, and you can forget it, can't you? What about things like... I mean, Moses basket you mentioned, Lucy. Did your son actually sleep in it?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. Because it's great because you can put it right next to you and your life becomes all about maximising extra seconds of sleep. So with the Moses basket, you don't have to put a cot side down. You can just have him next to you and pick him up, put him on the boob or stick a bottle in him much more easily than you can with a cot.
I have a memory certainly of owning a Moses basket, Ian, but I'm not sure either of my kids ever slept in them, to be honest with you.
We had one briefly and then we moved. We had the adjustable cot thing where the level sides. Goes down as they get bigger. But the biggest waste of money we had was the swinging crib. Because you see the swinging crib and you think, oh, I've seen that on films. That'd be great. I can just stick my foot out of the bed and just give her a little push and roll her. We put our daughter in a swinging crib that cost far too much money. And taken far too long to build, I should also say, especially when you're as bad at DIY as me. And we put her in, gave it a push, and she went straight into the bars. It was like an egg on a seesaw. Absolutely no stability there. She lasted, I swear, 15 seconds. Any never went in it again.
A memory of how much that cost?
It was over £100.
Just imagine that you do want to leave the room and leave your child for a moment or two. That's when we rely on the baby monitor, Lucy. Did you have one?
Oh, yeah, you can't manage without a...
Well, can you?
A baby monitor, I don't think.
No,
if you want to sleep easy in any way.
Was just an audio thing or did
yeah,
it have...
Yeah, just the audio.
What about a video screen?
I didn't even know you could get ones with videos. It's
you can now.
I'm just so far behind my own times. It's incredible. But no, my friend had one where it sensed if your baby stops breathing for 30 seconds or longer. And she found that quite useful because he was quite a, you know, I want to say difficult, but not obviously not, that sounds like I'm blaming him, but you know, a very tricky baby. And, it really gave her peace of mind. So I think, you know, by all means buy things with extra gizmos attached to them. If it genuinely makes you feel better and improves your quality of life and your quality of sleep, by all means buy it. But really think about what's really necessary for you.
And when the baby's very young, it's not a bad thing to have the baby sleeping with you in the bedroom, is it?
No, we had him there in the room, certainly for the first year, and then we've had a few months after that where we got used to the idea of transferring him to the room next door. But yeah, if you're ever away from him, you just baby monitor, it's just liberating.
Ian, did you find the baby monitor liberating? I've got great memories of my mum whispering in front of the baby monitor unit that was downstairs because she thought the baby could hear her talking. she did that for about 6 months before I explained that it wasn't
necessary.
But
I think you can get those now.
Okay,
so you can get two ways. And
you can press the transmit button.
She was ahead of her time, simply doing that.
She so is, yes.
The first set we bought was actually very expensive, the first set, and they doubled up as walkie-talkies, which me and my four-year-old nephew tested out. Had a range of about 500 yards, practically get the kid to the shops and back. So they were great fun. But the key is peace of mind. You have to have some time when the baby's asleep when you can just go downstairs and watch TV and not be, you know, thinking about the baby all of the time. So, but pretty much all you need is enough audio and ideally one with the little lights that go up when you hear a sound, and then put that either you can get a cordless one and just have it near you or put it in a plug that you can see while still looking at the TV. But nowadays there are ones with video cameras on that you can actually watch through your smartphone as well. And to be honest, I've found them off-putting. My sister and my brother-in-law, he's a very gadget-mad sort of chap, and he's set up the whole thing with night vision camera perched on the side of the crib, and it gives readouts for pulse and temperature and everything.
IQ.
Yeah. Tomorrow's weather, the shipping forecast. But I think that's too much. I don't think you can relax when you've got that. All you want to know is that if there's a noise, you hear it. You don't necessarily have to see every single twitch.
Yeah. Now, nothing matters more than sleep for you or for the baby. So blackout curtains. I remember agonising over blackout curtains. Did you have them? Have you got them?
We actually found blackout curtains to be more use as our daughter grew up. As a baby, once she was asleep, she would sleep in any conditions. Getting her there was the key. But the blackout curtains didn't really matter. But as she got older, Particularly in the summer, the sun comes up at 4 a.m. and suddenly you've got a very, very awake toddler standing on your head.
So get them, but they're not an essential right at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it largely depends on your child, but I didn't find them particularly essential. Dark or light, she'd still wake up when I didn't want her to.
Yeah. Yeah. Any views on that, Lucy?
Yeah, I love my blackout blinds. Love them. It's the greatest. It's my only moment of DIY. I was so determined to get that Velcro up. It's just a giant piece of... obviously, actually fitting blinds is beyond us. We couldn't even put the mobiles up that he got for over his crib. But we got these blackout blinds up, and it bought us an extra hour in the morning at least. It was beautiful, man.
At Nook, we believe our job is to make your life easier. For over 60 years, we've been listening to midwives, doctors, dentists, and most importantly, parents. Only by listening have we been able to deliver a range of products that is specifically designed to satisfy the needs of mother and baby in those precious early years. To find out more about the full range of Nook products, visit our website at www.nook.co.uk. Nook. Understanding life.
Now, the sleeping bag for a baby, there are some really cute ones. They look incredibly appealing. Are they necessary, or are they just one of those things that people have picked up on as a kind of trendy thing?
I thought they were brilliant because you have to, you know, you want to keep covers on the babies. You want to keep him or her warm and keep them asleep. And a simple sleeping bag that does all that, you just pop them in at the beginning of the night and you can still pick them up and you can still comfort them. There's no, you know, you don't have to unwrap them or anything. Genius.
Better than fiddling about with loads of sheets and little baby blankets, then.
Oh, yeah. Complete genius.
They don't get overheated in those things.
You get different thicknesses and different sizes. And no, he never did.
And they're machine washable as well.
Yeah, oh, yes, all of that. Yeah. All of that.
Ian, do you have a baby grow bag?
Yeah, we have the grow bag as well, which is particularly good in the you know, colder months. I think sometimes in the summer you can worry that they're going to get overheated, but invariably they'll let you know and you just undo it and they'll stick a foot out. They're quite good babies. They generally let you know if things aren't, you know, suited at that time. But the obvious benefit is that they can't work themselves into any position where the quilt goes over their head, which ideally is not a situation you want to be in.
And the temperature in the room, quite important. You don't want it to be too cold or too hot. So yeah. Do you need a thermometer?
You need the egg. You need the magic egg. You just plug it into the wall and it changes colour. If it's too cold, it goes blue. If it's too hot, it goes red. And it's all about peace of mind, because you can say, "Ooh, is it too cold in here?" You just look at the egg. The egg knows. Trust in the egg.
Aren't babies just like people? Some people like a cold bedroom. Some people like a warm bedroom.
What I always thought. I always thought if I was slightly uncomfortable and my husband was pretty comfortable because we were at the two extremes, then the baby was probably fine. I never had the egg or a thermometer.
I think it goes back to the baby as well. I think the egg primarily is peace of mind of the parents, but the baby will let you know if something's not right.
A lot of people carry their babies around. A lot of physical contact between parent and child is actually seems to be much more emphasis put on it now than there was when I was much, much younger. So the baby Bjorn is this... I remember it has that kind of 70s feel about it. Hippies, you know, carrying your baby around with you. Did you have one?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, you could go anywhere with that. You're portable. You could go shopping because you had two hands, one for carrying and one for paying money. You could even pretend that it was a kind of alien mastermind attached to your front by hiding your mouth and going, "I have taken over this adult," and do things like that, which never gets dull.
It's quite a macho thing, though, to go around carrying the fruit of your loins.
Absolutely.
Like that. Don't you think?
Look at me. I am fertile.
Yeah, so you acknowledge that aspect
yes,
of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you use one of those, Lucy?
I didn't. I found them too uncomfortable. I think you have to be quite strapping to get the best out of them. You know, it needs to be very much a kind of appendix to you, whereas for me it just pulled me forward and made me feel like I weighed a million pounds. I have to use the... I've always had to use the pram.
As men, we have less obstacles on the front of our body, which could make that kind of thing uncomfortable.
True fact.
So you didn't use the papoose thing either?
No. I mean, you know, I've got to admit, you know, there's no one who hates some hippies more than me, so I was prejudiced against them from the start. But I was also turned out to be too small for them.
Earlier on, you mentioned the muzzy, the cloth, yeah. Which was one of the great... I mean, I just didn't know what these things were until they became the absolute centre of my life. Explain what you do with a muslin cloth.
The muslin square, you do anything with it. You can swaddle your baby with it. You can wipe its face. in a sticky spot, almost literally. You can wipe its bum with them. You can moisten them to cool it down in a, you know, if it's feeling ill. You can put it over your shoulder to protect it against sick. You can make it into an impromptu beach hat. It's everything. It is everything. They are everything.
And these things come in packs of three or four, don't they?
I don't know. My mother supplied me with a sort of suitcase, sort of 4x4x4
right.
suitcase.
And did you wonder what they were, honestly, when you first saw them? Or did you
No, she'd been talking about them for years.
Decades.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were an essential, would you say?
Oh, yes. They're the dry, wet wipe of life after a baby. They can do anything and you don't go anywhere without one.
So far, then, we've talked about stuff for the baby and stuff in the home. What about for the mum? After birth or immediately before birth, there is actually nothing wrong with wearing your partner's tops. If they fit you, wear them. In fact, carry on wearing them if you absolutely have to. Who cares? Nobody's making judgments at this time in your life, are they?
If they are, just get rid of them.
Yes.
Just, you know, get rid of these awful people. I know I can't look at my photos from the first 6 months to a year of the child's life because I remember my friend saying to me, and I hadn't appreciated it really at the time, saying to me before I had the baby, saying, you know, you're getting somewhere where it takes you, you know, longer to change his nappy than it does to change yours. And I thought, what's she talking about? And then I discovered, because you're, you know, you've got the big pants on, you've got massive sanitary towels in there, you've got your giant jogging suit trousers to take account of it all. And, you know, it can take longer to change yourself for the first few weeks or months than it does to take, you know, get baby stays the same every day.
I think you're doing a good job of making light of this, but I've got to be honest and say that I remember I had two elective cesareans, and I can remember vividly staggering to the shower after having my first baby and looking at myself in the shower and thinking, I couldn't really stand up properly. I've looked down at my body and thought, what has happened here? It is a bit of a battleground, isn't it? I think that's whether you've had a cesarean or a vaginal delivery. And you can't expect too much of yourself at that time in your life.
I think especially if you've had a cesarean or a bad vaginal birth, just ask yourself what people would be asking of you if you'd been in a car crash that had caused a similar degree of pain and injury.
Or if you've had your appendix out.
Or anything, you know.
I remember being very jealous of people who'd had their appendix out after I had a baby.
Oh, give me keyhole surgery any day.
Well, just they get rest and everything. Be reassured. If you're feeling bad about yourself and the way you are and the way you look and the way you feel, other women certainly will understand. Anyone who's ever had a child will know how that feels.
Definitely. And the thing about it is you don't know that until and unless you've had any kind of birth, but certainly a bad birth. All is women and friends sort of come out of the woodwork with their stories that they don't tell you beforehand because either a sense of decorum or a sense of, you know, not wanting to bring the human race to a halt by ever telling people the truth before they've had children, is that it can be quite horrible, quite shocking, and take a very, very long time to heal. Ignore all the stories about people who, you know, get back to work within 5 days of having a cesarean. And if you've had, you know, a bad vaginal birth, things can take months to heal properly, and then they might not heal right, and you'll have to go in again and get it sorted. Just
give yourself a break.
Give yourself a break.
Yeah.
It's a big thing you've just done.
Yes, and that brings us on to men, Ian.
Oh,
yeah. Well, do you acknowledge now what we were just talking about, that your wife actually, your partner, do you believe, Ian, that your partner went through that situation that we've just been discussing?
Well, it's funny because I was talking to my wife about this morning, and I was under the impression I've been, you know, the most wonderful husband there is. So I said to her, you know, were there any little things that irritated you a bit, you know, when we just had a baby? She just looked at me hard in the eyes and she said, yes, your complete and utter incomprehension of everything I've been through. And I thought, God. Which is terrible from my point of view as well.
Did she read it out from a scroll?
Yeah. Tablets of stone.
But you thought, looking back, that you were doing the right... You were putting the kettle on, you were asking her how she was.
Absolutely, but I think Lucy absolutely nailed it. It's like being in a car crash. You're passing a very, very big solid through something that's only ever released a trickle of liquid. You know, that's going to be hideous, all kinds of hideous that no man could ever really imagine. And maybe there's no way that a man ever could really be considerate enough to take everything into account. But it is appalling because I was there at the time and had every first-hand witness idea. And my eyes are glazing over now as memories come back. It was absolutely appalling. I think all you can do as a man is just shut up, really, and just do everything that is asked of you. That's the best advice.
What about a token gift?
Oh,
gifts?
Yeah. God, yeah. I don't think the marriage would last much more than 24 hours if you didn't do that. And in my case, I got my wife a tablet. Not painkilling, but...
That's what she wanted.
Knocked her out for a week. She was delighted.
So you got her a tablet, which allowed her to... wasn't going to have a social life anyway, so she may as well look at her tablet.
Exactly. You get your box sets on there and your websites and everything like that, because she was going to be pretty immobile for quite a considerable period of time. Just do things like that and you will survive, men.
Oh, never mind whether the men survive. There is, I certainly did not, what's the expression, get my post-baby figure back for quite some time. If not, I think...
I did. It was really disappointing.
I don't know whose figure I've got now. It's probably not my own. But that business of, we've seen them in the papers, those amazing, miraculous women, who knows, maybe they've had cosmetic surgery along with their C-section, who do get their so-called figure back, Lucy. They do haunt us, those people, don't they?
They do. And so I don't mind so much about them, because I sort of think today's actors and actresses, they're basically athletes who happen to act. The amount of work they do, how fit they are. I've got a friend who's a great runner and does marathons, all that kind of thing. And when she was 5 months pregnant, she had a bump, the size of a peanut.
Yeah.
And I said, is everything all right? He said, "Yeah, I went to the doctor. He says it's all right. That's just what happens if you've got muscle tone." I was like, "Oh, right." But it was so unusual to see anyone who's that fit. But they're all like that. And so, of course, when they pop these babies out, having been in the peak of fitness, a proper Olympian peak of fitness, of course they're going to pop back like that. That's fine. I don't mind that. They've worked hard for it. Enjoy it. But just don't hold it up as representative. And I don't think they do. It's it's just the various evil newspapers that do that.
So would you recommend joining a gym, going to a gym, or even actually allowing yourself to focus on what your figure looks like? Maybe that's another thing you need to give yourself a break from.
I would say, if you went to the gym before and you like going to the gym, go to the gym as soon as you feel ready. If you've never done it before in your life, this is not the time to start.
Ian, really isn't. Did you ever say anything about your wife's appearance?
How stupid do I look?
Well,
don't answer that, actually. No, God, she'd just created life. She'd just presented me with a daughter. The last thing I was going to comment on was questions of body image. I mean, I think... Yeah, it's fair enough. It's something you'll definitely worry about before it happens. But there's going to be a period of 3 months after the birth, or maybe even longer, where you're not even going to know what day it is, what the weather's like, whether it's summer or winter. The last thing you really need to worry about is what your bum looks like in a pair of jeans.
And if you do spend, 6 months in a pair of tracksuit bottoms and a selection of slightly stained tops, Lucy... Well, that's just what life is.
That's freelance life.
And it's not going to be forever. And don't get down about it if you can help it.
Yeah, absolutely. Normal rules do not apply. And in as much as the normal rules should ever apply, half of them, you'll know, you might worry about it now. It'd be very unlikely, I think, once you've had the baby, that you are so conscious or desirous of maintaining previous standards.
The other thing I noticed is that I lost shyness, actually. And if I was out in whatever kind of weather it might be with a baby in a park or... In fact, that was the other thing. I didn't even know we had a local park until I had a baby. Boy, did I notice that park. If I saw another woman who looked like she'd have a chat with me, I would go up and I would talk to her, whether she had the slightest interest in engaging with me or not. But actually, I had a pretty good success rate. Most people were as eager as I was just to have a chat.
I know. It's like having a dog, isn't it? It opens up this whole new world of...
I think it's better than having a dog.
...social interaction.
Rubbish at chasing sticks, though.
My daughter's never got good at that. So you do, in a way, you have to overcome. If you are maybe a more reticent individual, you park that side of yourself for a while, don't you? For the sake of your sanity, actually.
I don't think I became more sociable, but I certainly became much more proactive. You know, if I needed a, if I needed a seat and someone had their bag on there, or if I needed to get here, there, or everywhere, sorry, would you mind? I can't. Can you open the door for me? Thank you so much. Or, you know, can you get your bag off there? You know, woman going to sit down or woman going to fall down? You know, lots of things like that. And just, you know, you just get through the day much more quickly because you've got to be looking after this thing and getting from A to B to C in time.
In the house then, were you breastfeeding and doing some bottle feeding as well?
I had to do mixed feeding at the beginning and then it was all boob.
Okay. So you needed a steriliser at home?
Yep.
Yeah, and that is an essential?
Yes, that is.
A breast pump, I mean, not everybody wants to breastfeed. Not everybody can use a breast pump. I think I tried. I'm not sure it was a raging success. Lucy?
We bought one when we had to, really, when it was a choice between, because I was just destroyed. By about, yeah, sort of 6 to 8 weeks in, my boobs were so everything about me was so sore. I was about to give up breastfeeding and someone said, I think the health visitor or someone said, do you want to, can you try pumping, you know, do you think you can manage it? So I'll give it a go. So we went. That's when we went out and bought one. I don't think I would have bothered buying one beforehand, even if I'd thought of it. It seems to me to be computing too many variables.
But it did work.
It did work for me, but it doesn't for a lot of people. My friend who from the classes, antenatal classes at the time, she tried it and didn't get on with it. And my best friend who's just had a baby, she isn't getting on with it either. So again, it's not your fault, you know. The mechanics of your boob that you have no control over don't match up with the mechanics of a breast pump. That's not a matter of culpability. That's just fact.
I will forever treasure Christmas Day 1999, which I spent largely wrestling with a breast pump and with the help of my sister, who also says she'll never forget that Christmas night. and I was glad of the presence of my sister because in a funny way, and this wasn't, it's not a very sexy part of your life.
No.
And wrestling with a breast pump, I mean, of all life's experiences, probably one of the least alluring.
And if your husband finds it alluring, you've got more
on your plate than we can cater for in this podcast.
I found it rather more agricultural than alluring.
Yeah.
But it was, when it works, it's fantastic because it essentially buys you time to avoid the breastfeeding in the middle of the night, that you can cover that base. And also, when we had our daughter, we lived in South Shields up in the northeast where there were not many 24-hour shops. And I was covering a football tournament in South America just off the TV, wanted a cup of coffee, there was no milk. And you know what? It's all right. It's okay. Slightly honeyed, you know, interesting texture, but
taking the food out of your child's mouth,
literally.
Fine. It was only a little bit.
God, I just remember my ever unflappable dad coming into the sitting room with me with my boob out in the pump, and he going, "Do you want a sandwich, love?" And I'm Dad, I'm just going to get on.
What kind of a sandwich was he offering you? Just
chicken.
Okay, Lucy, thank you for that. And that's a lovely story about your dad and the sandwich. I think everyone's got one of those dad meets breastfeeding for the first time anecdotes, because not all of us knew all that much about breastfeeding before we tried to do it, and our parents had never seen the likes. Let's focus then on the two things you've absolutely got to have, which really have got to be brand new, not necessarily cheap, but they have got to be brand new. One is the car seat in which you leave hospital with your newborn baby. The other is the baby mattress. The mattress for the cot or for the Moses basket has got to be absolutely new. But as we've indicated during this conversation, all sorts of things are thrown at you as rather tempting so-called essentials. And I bet we've all spent money on stuff we really didn't need. I know I ploughed a lot of money into a kind of scented, super organic, nappy, chomping bin, which was just a load of rubbish, and I've been far better off just hoofing the thing into the general bin. Lucy, what about you?
You know, I'm so mean, I don't think I overspent on anything.
Okay, so the one thing you couldn't possibly have got through the last couple of years without?
Big knickers.
And Ian, have you got big knickers?
Yes, I have. Not necessary, but very comfortable. The most essential thing that we had was, I think, the playmat when they're a little bit older. The great big colourful playmat with things hanging down that make noises. It's kind of like being in the chill-out room in a 1990s club. The kids are just sitting there waving their hands about, getting amazing visuals. That was great because then you can just put your baby down in a place where it cannot possibly do itself any damage.
Yeah, and we should say, of course, in the very early stages, the baby cannot be thunderstruck wandering around the house,
exactly,
playing with plugs, because it's just not possible.
It would be disturbing if it happened.
Yeah. And the thing that you spent money on that you didn't need to?
Oh, only did it once, but scented nappy bags. We live in a very commercial world. There are some things that are enhanced by being branded and having personality, but a small sack to put poo in is not something that needs to be a deluxe version. You can get them very, very cheap from supermarkets. They'll last forever. They come with their own scent anyway, but you are essentially just going to put poo in it and put it in the bin. You don't need to spend on really expensive nappy sacks.
Thank you for making that clear, Ian. That's... If anybody had the slightest doubt what we were talking about, we now all understand. My thanks to Ian McIntosh and to Lucy Mangan. You can find them on Twitter. It's at Lucy Mangan and at Ian McIntosh. And almost as simply, I'm at Jane Garvey One. And if you like what you've heard, please do tell your friends and fellow mums and mums-to-be by sharing this podcast on Facebook. And if you've got the time between nappy changes and feeds, then leave a comment or a review for us on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. I'm Jane Garvey, and thank you very much for listening. We'll talk again soon.
You've been listening to the My Baby and Me podcast in association with Nook. Visit us at nook.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.